You know, a communication strategy is a great way to make your website profitable for you. Think about the hours that you save that you can then spend servicing other clients or improving your business that you're not having to spend standing behind the counter, talking to individual clients, repeating the same thing over and over again. And most business people I speak to, I say to them, what are the things that you frequently talk to your customers about? Are they the same things over and over again? And invariably it is yes. So why not capture it and put it in there and use it that way?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner from Paradise, Australia is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello, and here we are with another episode of David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner. This is series two, and this is episode four, where David Council and I talk about all good things business and internet and advertising and so on. Hello, David. How are we doing?
I'm good, Groover. Another great week to be getting together, sitting around the campfire, because, you know, that's what we do, and talk marketing. A little later on, we might even sing Kumbaya. Stick around for that.
Groover, mate. I've never been introduced as, you know, hello, Groover. That's, well, hey, there you go. That's what you get with recording with different cultures from around the world. Sorry, mate. Anyway, look, here we are, episode four. We're halfway through, probably, series two. Previous episodes of series two here, we've talked about branding and Google search and copywriting for SEO and so on. You know, it's all been good stuff. So hopefully this will be another good week's episode. What have you been up to this week, Dave? All been good stuff? Been busy?
Oh, mate, absolutely flat stick. Absolutely flat stick. What about you?
Oh, indeed. It's just non-stop. It's all good stuff. Keeps us busy. But hey, you know, enough of that.
So, David, what are we going to talk about this week?
It's websites again. And this is quite a dear topic to me in some ways. How a website can increase your profitability. We were talking about this before, and we've talked about various aspects of it in the past as well, I think. But many, many years ago, I did a master's degree, and it was all about the impact of the internet on business models. And at the time, and we were talking like mid to late 90s here, and the internet was in its infancy, and lots of people were talking in very excited terms about how the internet was going to change everything. You know, you would do all your shopping would be done online, and all sorts of good stuff, much of which, I must say, you know, has come true, and some of which possibly hasn't. But my research that I was involved with was the impact of the internet on business models and what it would mean for businesses. And there was some quite interesting stuff came out, actually, that although there was a lot of talk at the time, you know, this was just before the dot-com bubble. You know, people were setting up businesses to deliver all sorts of things, which were kind of like the internet, and that the infrastructure around it wasn't quite really ready for it at the time. I mean, you know, we're talking that you know, broadband barely existed. I think you know, most people were connecting in on 56K modems, and you know, it was a great way to source information. And it was, you know, companies were getting their first websites up. I mean, that was in the days when, you know, a fairly small scale business would be paying anything between $50,000 and $100,000 for a website, the sort of thing that you now maybe get for $2,000 or $3,000. As obviously, you can still pay $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 for a website, but you're going to be a behemoth of an organization compared to the kind of figures that were being bandied about in those days. I did a lot of recent contact. Did a lot of research, contacted a lot of people, a lot of businesses, to find out how they were using the internet, how they thought they were going to be using the internet, what they thought it would mean for them, and so on. And actually, one of the things that came out of this was, yes, it was going to be a mechanism for driving more sales, and you know, more sales would mean hopefully more profit. You know, that's generally the way a business works. The more it sells, normally the more profits available from each sale. But also, though, as an enabling mechanism, in various ways, it would enable them to A, do things that weren't possible in the first place previously without the internet and without a website, and secondly to save money as they implemented different delivery mechanisms. Perhaps some of the stuff was as much about saving money and delivering a more efficient service, which would then enable them to build sales through traditional means perhaps, or branding and marketing, as much as anything else. So using a website to increase profitability, there's several aspects to it. I used to work for a software company, and at least this is a good example. In a software company, is how that changed from the early 90s when people used to order a product and we would send out physical tape. It was a chunky tape that used to go in these super disk drives. You know, they would cost about $100 a go, and then you went to CDs, and then oddly enough you went to a website where people could log in and download the software to which they were licensed for. So you went from a mechanism which used to cost in terms of having a member of staff to send out the software and make sure it was all properly licensed and they got the right ones, and you had manuals and everything like that that used to have to go with it. Even when you sent out CDs and stuff, you still needed people to actually physically do that. Having a website where it's set up, it self manages almost. The amount of time that you need to spend on maintaining that site, that aspect of it became much less, so you could redeploy that person to do something more useful, and your cost of delivery went through the floor. The customers loved it, they got benefit, and you lost that resentment of people having to pay a delivery charge and a physical media charge. So that's just one little aspect. You had much larger organizations just being able to manage the logistics, if you like. I can't remember which one it was, FedEx or UPS or somebody like that. One of their general managers, I think, was a marketing manager, was being interviewed about the impact of the internet on their business. And they said, and bear in mind, this was mid-90s, and I can't remember which company it was, one of those big ones. So it said, we don't actually see the internet generating revenue for us. But it's such an enabler in terms of what it allows us to do, that it will increase our profitability through the back end, if you like, of running the business. Knowing where parcels are, tracking them, organising the logistics of the drivers and the collections and the deliveries and stuff like that was going to be such a big thing. Let alone the fact, they hadn't really thought, I don't think at that time, that people would go on to the website to enter the size and weight of their packages and print off their own labels and then stick them in the doorway for the delivery driver to come and collect or take them to a local parcel shop. That whole enabling mechanism for customers, obviously then drives more sales and allows you to become more profitable. The customer's doing a lot of the stuff for themselves, you're reducing the call center stuff. So massive, massive amounts of opportunity for doing that. These are all stories, I'm aware of that, and whatever.
Okay, stories are good.
Yeah, indeed. Another great one was, I believe, one of the big low-cost budget airlines where the tech guys were implementing a new computer system, a new back-end system for dealing with all the transaction processing and stuff like that. This was mid-90s, and the business, again, I think it was Ryanair, which is Europe's biggest low-cost airline, I believe, probably one of the biggest airlines in the world now. The guys were implementing this system, and they were notorious for keeping costs to an absolute minimum. And part of the software that was available to them was an online sales system, if you like. And they just got the software company to wrap that bit into the price. To lose it as a separate item rather, so that that they weren't going to be accused of spending thousands of pounds on this customer ordering the sales interface software because they thought the boss wouldn't pay for it, and that software then became actually the backbone of their business expansion, because suddenly customers could go online and they could search for flights, search for destinations, book their own, stick their credit cards in, and book their low cost flights. It was perceived by them as an add-on that they hadn't really thought about the consequences of quite what it would mean for the business. But obviously it turned into a huge, huge enabler and a huge, huge revenue generator and profit generator for them. Mm. Because before that, you know, I used to use this airline in the early 90s, you had to phone up their call center. That was the only way you could book a flight. So, you know, imagine the costs involved in that versus the costs involved in running even the huge website that it is. It probably pales into insignificance against the alternatives. If they're running a business that has millions and millions of flights a month, the cost involved of being a telesales operation, a call center operation that manages that would be. So yeah, lots of ways. You know, again, these are stories. These are big picture stories. You've got the revenue generation side of it, you've got the cost saving side of it, you've got the enabling side of it as to how your website can add value to you and add profit for you.
I think that for a lot of business people, and you've got to think about the average age of people who still run businesses around the world. You know, most of them are a bit sort of, you know, like us, you know, fat 40, farty. some of us are even older than that. And for me, they're a bit like the hoverboards from Back to the Future 2. So Back to the Future came out in, what, 85, somewhere around there? And the target market for Back to the Future was, say, 11 to 15-year-old boys. That would have been the primary market. You know, that's that sort of age. So those kids now are 41 to 46 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody comes on the news tomorrow morning and says, I have a hoverboard just like in Back to the Future 2, 41 to 46... yeah, you're really starting to get to an age where riding a hoverboard is not something you're likely to be rushing out to do at all. You know, you're starting to get a bit breakable at that age. So because some of these business people are older and the idea of having a website isn't part of the way that they were educated in how to make money from a business, they fall into the trap of saying, need a website, tick, got one. But aren't really thinking about how it works for them and how it can make their business more profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they end up with websites that they go, yeah, I've got a website. I don't know that it does anything. I'm not really quite sure, you know, how it's meant to be doing something. You know, the younger guys in the business seemed pretty switched on about it, but I don't pay much attention to it. And they're the ones, once again, who don't go in and make changes to their website, and all of a sudden, you know, their Google ranking's going upside down and they can't work out what's going on with that either, and it all gets a bit hard. But if they only sat down and looked at where the money could be made, they would see things like how they could be saving time by having a website, how they could be generating a second income stream through that website, how they could be reaching both their local market and potentially a slightly wider group of people again with their business and generating money from those people, how they could be using it as part of a communication strategy with their customers. You know, once upon a time, you'd go into a local business. Now, we're talking back when I was a kid. So, you know, we're talking the 70s. And people would go in and they'd talk to the shopkeeper and they'd have reasonable length conversations with the shopkeeper. And the shopkeeper would tell them, you know, how to use products or, you know, are you having that problem? Oh, mate, you know what you need? You need one of these. That was the communication strategy. It was all walking around in the head of the guy standing or the girl standing behind the counter. So that was a reasonable communication strategy when you think about it. You know, how else do you communicate with people back then? Well, you had the big three: newspaper, radio, television. But for a lot of businesses, that was, you know, out of their budget for doing it, especially if you're operating a small business. So you also had you could send out direct mail, but that involved a level of graphic design that wasn't available to them. So they had to employ a graphic designer to do that. And, I mean, seriously, in the 1970s, graphic designers, they were a rare breed. They, you know, not many graphic designers knocking around. Most of them used to work for high-end advertising agencies too, or went on to become interior designers, and that's a whole different story. So, you know, that was probably out for them. So the phone, people would ring up, they'd have a chat with them on the phone. But there was very little telemarketing going on. You know, honestly, I don't remember a telemarketer calling my home until we were in the 90s. So very little telemarketing in this country going on at that stage. And certainly no one would call you after you went home for the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
No mobile phones. So your best opportunity to communicate with your customer was when they were in the shop. And you'd talk to them about your problem or about their problem, and you would provide a solution, and they'd walk out with an armful of stuff. So that was the way that they were trained. They don't understand that the communication strategy of today is to still do that, but to provide it in a format whereby the customer can take a lot of that information on board before they walk into the shop. And when they walk in, they're asking qualified questions along the way. And that's just absolutely gold. And a lot of people are really afraid that if they share that information on their website, that their competitors will steal it. Really, not the case. The competitors know it as well. And honestly, if your competitor stumbles across something that you know that they don't, it's no big secret. Somebody else knows it anyway. They were bound to find it out. You know, just because they weren't listening at that point of view, they are going to find out. So, you know, a communication strategy is a great way to make your website profitable for you. Think about the hours that you save that you can then spend servicing other clients or improving your business that you're not having to spend standing behind the counter talking to individual clients, repeating the same thing over and over again. And most business people I speak to, I say to them, what are the things that you frequently talk to your customers about? Are they the same things over and over again? And invariably it is yes. So why not capture it and put it in there and use it that way? Because, you know, most businesses you walk into, you have been to the website of that business at some stage before you go there. And there might be a few exceptions. There always are. These, you know, sweeping generalizations aren't hard and fast rules, but these days it is getting less and less. You know, before I go to a restaurant, I check out the menu. I want to know exactly where it is. You know, should I be asking for a window seat? Am I better to be sitting closer to the big log fire in that restaurant? Same sort of deal with a mechanic. I want to know what he's going to offer me when I walk in the door. Is he the sort of mechanic that's really just trying to, you know, pitch me a low price and walk me up into the other stuff that he sells? Buying a car. Most people go into a car dealership these days, they know more about the car than the guy who's about to sell them the car.
Indeed. I had that, you know, same situation recently. So I was looking at the car, and it wasn't a brand new one. So I was looking at reviews and common faults and, you know, likely servicing costs and that kind of thing. You know, so you got, you know, what the internal spec was, what extras were, what extras included, but what stuff was included by standard and what stuff you'd have to pay for. So you'd know everything about that car when you got there. As you say, you know, you were asking questions, which meant that you were already qualified. You know, you had an interest in, the guy wasn't having to sell you about this aspect or that aspect. He was able, because I'd already done the groundwork to satisfy my own questions on most things. We were down to the negotiation part, the bits that you can't necessarily do anonymously on a website. You know, what was he going to give me for my car as a trade-in? And how much would he do this, and what extras would they throw in, and da-di-da-di-da. So, you know, if you're at that stage as a customer turning up to buy something or consider buying something, you know, you're already pre-qualified, you've done a load of work, you're, I won't say a salesman's delight, because you'll try and get everything else you can out of them perhaps, but, you know, they're a much more efficient sale for you as a salesperson. You know, you don't have to spend three times the amount of time to get the customer to the same position. You know, they've already done that for themselves. They've self-satisfied a lot of their queries. Talking about communication, as you were, I mean, this is again a great enabler and revenue generator, and it's another garage situation. A garage I deal with, spoken to them many times about their website and stuff. You know, they have a brochure website. They have this website that's, you know, here's a homepage, here's a telephone number, here's where we are. This is what we do, these are the kind of services we provide, and that's it. You know, there's a contact form, there's a telephone number, and that's it. Now, I'll say, you know, what you ought to be doing is every time somebody comes into your garage and, you know, you give them an invoice and all this sort of stuff, they've paid your bill, get them to have your website there up and running with a newsletter sign up page, and they've just put their name, their email address, and the date of their next annual check. You know, their statutory, we call it an MOT over here, Ministry of Transport check. Yep, you have to have your car after 3 years. You have to have your car checked every year to make sure it's roadworthy. You know, and then you can email them automatically 6 weeks in advance of that check being due to say, you know, your MOT is due in the next month. You know, don't forget to book it in. You know, so you've got a yearly contact with that customer almost by default, you know, let alone the fact you can send out an email 3 times a year, 4 times a year to all your database to say, don't forget your winter service, don't forget your, you know, going away on summer holiday, don't forget your summer service. You know, is your, because you might have, you know, people have different driving habits and stuff like that. It might be rather harder to time the servicing to quite such a neat little window. But you can at least maintain contact with them and hit them with a message, a marketing message, on a relatively sensible timescale basis, where you are encouraging them to come in. Now, if you've already, you know, instead of having to hope that your newspaper advert or whatever else, whatever marketing you do, hits these people at the right time, you know that your email will hit them at the right time for their annual check. You know, it's bound to. The only thing that would have changed is that they've sold the car. Well, hey, they'll have a different one and that'll need it, and they'll be back in contact. Oh yeah, you know, yeah, I need to get my car down to you. You'll have done with your 3 or 4 other emails a year. You'll have maybe triggered them to contact you for a service. You know, or we do tires, so that, you know, they're about to need a new tire at some point in the year. So, you know, you're maintaining that message with them. And I'm just actually looking at some stats from an email system that I manage for a restaurant. They have a change of menus, and we've sent out 2 emails over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm looking at, this is a small provincial restaurant, a small town restaurant, and we've sent out 1,000 emails, and we have 620 people have opened those emails, 250 have clicked through to look at the menus, and I know for a fact that you know, people are phoning up and reserving tables, and it's because of this. So that's a simple thing. It's an email system that probably costs them $70 a quarter, about $120 a quarter. So what's that? $500 a year, and they will take thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in return on that. So, you know, that's something they couldn't do without a website. Their only other means of promotion without a website would be flyers, newspaper adverts, radio ads, whatever. All have their place, and no problem with that. You know, it's all part of an integrated marketing policy that you can implement, but the website is the driver, and their website drives their profitability for sure.
And if we hark back to my example of the 1970s, to have obtained that database, they would have either had to have got business cards from every one of their customers that they came in, and then transcribed them into a list, which they then would have given to a mail fulfillment company to send that out as direct mail, or they would have had to have bought that list quite expensively too, to achieve that. Well, you know, not anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they're really clever, they would also have a pixel on that new menu page, so that anybody that does go to that new menu page can be followed around by remarketing ads that show up in different areas as well. So once again, the advertising is targeted at the people who are most likely to spend. Well, how much more profitable is that going to make your business? Because you haven't got wastage. It's all going to the people who are the key people who are most likely to come and spend money with you. And for example, you can also change the message that goes with that pixel, so that once they've been through the cycle once and tested out the new menu, you change the remarketing message over so that it says come back again. And then, you know, you're not having to change your menu as hard and as fast, and you're not struggling to get that message out there.
I was just going to say, you know, what you were saying there, there's a phrase I heard many years ago, which I thought was a great one. It's like shooting fish in a barrel.
That's the one.
You know, you just can't miss. So you know, well, you can miss, but it's, you know, the focus, it's laser precision, it's tightly targeted. you've got no wastage. You know what you were saying, you've got no wastage, you're not wasting your effort, you've really got it focused. And that's one of the real beauties of a website, that you can build a database, you can focus your message, you can focus all your marketing efforts, all the digital marketing efforts that you focus through your website. You can do it so effectively and efficiently to really get the best from it. So, you know, in terms of, you know, how can a website increase profitability? We've covered two or three things there. You know, it's a huge enabler to enable you to contact and communicate with your customer base, your existing customers, in a far more effective and efficient and cheaper way than before. Mm. Not only saving money, but generating much more money through what it's enabling you to do. You know, it's all linked together. It's saving money, it's enabling, it's generating money for you. And you know, it's just fantastic. Imagine an estate agent, you know, again, this real estate agent, realtors, whatever you call them in different countries, you know, they're all online now. In fact, there are some that are only online, because, you know, people in the old days, you had to walk past a high street store that had photographs of houses in the window. You then had to go in and feel slightly intimidated, and you know, are you really interested in the house? You know, the sales process would start with the agent straight at you. You always felt you were being sucked in, you know, and whatever. Now you can get all the preliminary qualifying information up front through the website. You know, look at areas that you hadn't necessarily considered because they're perhaps you weren't aware of that area of town, you weren't aware of that village, whatever. You don't want to go in the old days, you'd perhaps go driving by to see, you know, what might be available, and now you don't have to. Now you can do all that pre-qualification from the comfort of your own home. Absolutely fantastic for estate agents. People walk into their shop, pick up the phone to, you know, I'm interested in this house. They genuinely are. You know, you've got through all that pre-qualification. You, as an estate agent, are enabling, saving time and saving money, and communicating people. You know, people will sign up your list to send me details of any new houses, any new properties that are coming on the market. You know, fantastic. The days of estate agents used to produce their own newspapers, 25-page newspaper with all their properties in it, and they'd have them in racks outside their door. You know, the efficiency with which they now communicate what properties they have is just changed beyond belief. Mm. So,
and if you don't know how to find those opportunities to be profitable with using a website, talk to someone who does. Talk to someone who can see that bigger scope, because they will help you, you know, find your way through this maze that you might be struggling with. I spoke to two guys the other day, never met before. One of them was 64 and the other one was 69. And they were just launching a joint venture, and I said to them, and a website was what it was all about. And I said to them, well, how much longer do you guys actually want to work for? And they said, oh, well, you know, 5, certainly no more than 10 years. And I said, okay, so if you're going to do this, you're trying to build a database into your business so that you can sell that. And they said, oh, no one ever buys businesses like ours. Now, at that point, they had two choices. They could say, but they might in 10 years. So we'll build a database, or no, that doesn't matter. All we're really interested in is doing a few transactions. We're actually still working because our wives don't want us to be hanging around the house 24/7, which was the way that we were actually going. So I said, okay, yeah. So we don't need to build a database. So that actually saves you money, but here's how you can make that profitable for you. And we spoke about the ways that they could use that website to make it profitable for them. And they walked out happy as Larry. And they came in with a preconceived idea that a new website was going to cost them somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000, because the last time that they looked at a website, that's what they cost.
Yeah, indeed.
I saw one of their websites, and seriously, it was diabolical. It was just frighteningly horrible, but that was because they spent $5,000 on it last time and were too scared to go and get another one because they didn't want to spend the $5,000. So they persevered with this horrible old website that had gone massively out of date.
Yeah, indeed. No, it's amazing. Okay, I think we've covered some good ground there. Options, those three words, I'll say it again. You can save, enable, or generate. And websites enable you to do all three of those. And just make sure that they're in your control. You know, what you can do with a website is more, it's your property, it's your asset, it's your means, it's your platform. Other platforms, you know, some small business, oh yeah, we've got a Facebook page. Yeah, Facebook page, great, you know, it's great for communicating, getting stuff out there, but it's not really a platform to build your business on. You know, you won't see big companies where their sole means of their sole online property is a Facebook page. It's a great tool for communicating and engaging, but it's not necessarily the basis of a enabling, saving, profit generating tool. But your website is, and we've covered some great ways of doing it there, I think, David. Well, great stuff. And yeah, look, let's call this a day then. And just to mention quickly what we're going to be talking about next week. It's one of your favorite kind of topics, isn't it, actually, David? You say, as your big thing, your background.
5 to 9, 25 degrees, you're rocking Triple M. Yeah, radio. We are going to talk about radio. And radio is fabulous. Well, let's face it, in my case, it is the basis upon which the family fortune was originally based. So, you know, check it out.
You can't keep an old DJ down, can you? It's fantastic.
Hey, we'll be sending out icy cold cans of Coca-Cola in Black Thunder. Stick around.
It was an era. Right, look, okay. Find this and previous episodes at our website, davidversusdavid.com, where you can download everything. Oh, gosh, it's gone to pot already. Jeez. Right, and you can also engage with us if you really want to at facebook.com/davidversusdavid.
Or as we used to call it, call us on the feedback line. Let us know what you're thinking. 25 degrees. Here's in excess.
Oh, I'll give up. It's iOS, iTunes as well. You know the rest, blimey. Right then, off until next week. Let's, good grief.
Hey, next week. We're not... yeah, next week.
Stop it.
Be there.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See you, guys. Or, copy you later. Catch you on the flip side.
You have just been listening to the David vs. David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.